Penguin Audio presents Bad Money, Reckless Finance, Failed Politics, and the Global Crisis of American Capitalism by Kevin Phillips. Read by Scott Brick. Gresham's Law, a general law or principle concerning the circulation of money, named after Sir Thomas Gresham, who clearly perceived its truth 3 centuries ago. This law, briefly expressed, is that bad money drives out good money, but that good money cannot drive out bad money. W.S. Jevons, 19th Century Economist. In a global free market, there is a variation on Gresham's law. Bad capitalism tends to drive out good. Professor John Gray, False Dawn, 1998. Preface. The Political Economics of Deception. The most worrisome thing about the vulnerability of the U.S. economy circa 2008 is the extent of official understatement and misstatement, the preference for minimizing how many problems there are and how interconnected they are. This volume amplifies and updates 2 of the 3 challenges set out in my 2006 book, American Theocracy, The Perils and Politics of Radical Religion, Oil, and Borrowed Money in the 21st Century. Radical religion got much of its necessary comeuppance in November 2006. The perils of housing and debt, of oil, and of the dollar have, however, only increased. Whether or not the U.S. government and the Republican and Democratic parties can remedy the debt and oil-related transformations of the last 2 or 3 decades is dubious enough. Far more worrisome is the possibility that neither Washington nor Wall Street is willing to confront the deeper problem, the ascendancy of finance in national policymaking, as well as in the gross domestic product, and the complicity of politicians who really don't want to talk about it. Falling home prices are getting most of the attention now, with pessimists predicting the greatest plunge of our lifetimes. We are told that much of the risk comes from mortgage lenders who signed up too many bad risks. Under normal circumstances, such misjudgments would not be so numerous as to weigh so dangerously. But this time there were huge institutional pressures to entice as many customers as possible, reflecting the enormous profits to be made from taking mortgages and securitizing and repackaging them en masse in what became, most people now recognize these names, mortgage-backed securities and collateralized debt obligations. Lenders needed to woo high-risk borrowers for the good commercial reason that there weren't enough low-risk borrowers to meet the volume demanded by the big commercial banks, investment banks, and other packagers, all pursuing the lucrative fees. What's securitization? Some will ask. A pompous 6-syllable word to begin with, but also a humongous new business launched by Wall Street in the 1990s. To oversimplify somewhat, sophisticated financial institutions discovered gold in tying together 500 or 5,000 loans, mortgages, or whatever, and then selling fresh securities based and valued on the new assemblage. These securities, issued in pricey amounts, were cut into separate slices or tranches, French and suitably expensive sounding, according to degrees of risk. Sure, some of the slices had lower credit ratings, but risk could be spread out and the affected bits of patisserie sold more cheaply. In practice, however, there was less clarity and candor, sometimes considerably less. These new financial organizations were not exactly the brokerages and First National Banks of our parents' era. But that's part of the staggering transformation, one of the greatest stories never really told. Between 1987 and 2007, debt, in all flavors, from credit card and mortgage to staid U.S. Treasury and exotic Wall Street, became one of the nation's largest, fastest-growing businesses. Over those 2 decades, so-called credit market debt roughly quadrupled from $11 trillion to $48 trillion. This was abetted by a revolution in marketing, packaging, and propaganda. In reality, public debt wasn't the big ballooner. Private debt was. Without much publicity, the financial services sector, banks, securities,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?